Pastor Steve's going to come, and we're gonna spend the next few weeks doing a series called The Characters of Christmas. And our first character that Steve's going to be sharing about is the prophets.
Thank you, Tyler. I just had to come up and verify that you actually got it lit. Yeah, there we go. Good morning, everybody. Those of you online, welcome also. Now that we have comfortably and enjoyably put Thanksgiving to bed, now we're headed towards celebrating Christmas. And as Tyler has mentioned, we'll be looking this morning at hope as viewed through the eyes of a prophet, the prophet Isaiah. If you'd like, you could turn in a Bible if you have one. I'm hoping you have one, to Isaiah 7. We're going to look at the first 14 verses. Speaking about hope, the prophets have, in particular, Isaiah has prophesied, as many of you realize, prophesied the coming of Jesus Christ 700 years before it even happened. Hope is a big deal for us. We hope in a lot of things. Most of my growing up, it was, I hope my team will win. Sorry, Duck fans. I'm sure your heart is broken. But I know that there's other people rejoicing. But when I was growing up, it was in São Paulo, Brazil, and I was a missionary's kid there. And probably the last 3 years of my high school, I would get to go down to Esporte Ginásio Ibirapuera to see about 10,000 people. I was part of about 10 to 12,000 people in a basketball arena. Beautiful, nice basketball arena. It was in São Paulo at the time, was about 9 million people. And to go down and see this little tournament with four different teams, usually it was usually the United States, Brazil, Yugoslavia was often one, and Mexico. And they do a little tournament, and I'd go down and watch it. And I loved Brazil's soccer team in the World Cup, which is going on now, and I was a big fan of soccer. But when it came to basketball, I wanted to be a part of showing that we've got basketball nailed down, and that it's took such great pride in knowing that the United States has the best basketball team in the world. And I was going to go down there to witness this, obvious to everyone. And when the United States was playing Brazil that particular night, and the U.S. was losing quite badly, and there was very few minutes left. And I remember, I could still kind of see this in my mind's eye, way up in the bleachers there, looking down in disbelief. And I caught myself looking over towards the doors that went to the tunnel where the locker room, all the players would come out of those doors. So I was looking at those doors, waiting for them to pull out their trump card, the Kareem, back in the day, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jerry West. They were going to come out of those doors and come on the court and save the day. I looked over there with hope. They never came. And the U.S. lost. And the world went on. But for a 16, 17-year-old kid, that was a big deal. My hope was shattered. And all the 10,000 other Brazilians were cheering about the Brazilian team that we're, and they see they would bill it as they've just defeated the United States, the big powerhouse, and they were so excited. Yeah, good for them. Good for them. Just real quickly, though, a few years later, they actually sent down NBA players, John Havlicek, Willis Reed, and so forth, and they cleaned the court with. They just devastated. Anyway, that's not very kind to say. But hope, when we hope in something and it doesn't come through, it's quite devastating. Some of you might remember a movie that was so good they did a remake on it some years ago called Flight of the Phoenix, where a plane crashes, I think it was in the Mongolian desert, and they survive, but the plane was barely intact, and the captain of the plane said, let's just stay here and wait. You know, you wander very far from this plane. There's no water out there. We are so far from civilization. Just stay here. Don't do anything. Just stay here. The next morning, they kind of assessed who all was there and how everyone was doing, and they realized one person was missing. That person had got up during the night and left. So the captain of this airplane went walking out there after him and found him and said, "Why did you leave?" And in so many words, he just said, "If you can't give anybody hope, just give them something to do." And I think that is often really, that's not really necessarily, I'm trying to say, is the solution to things. But if we don't have hope in a particular outcome, we will do something else. Steve Ant has done something else. If my hope in God providing it doesn't seem to be coming through, then I will go over here and at minimum, just worry. Worry, scheme, connive. What do I have up my sleeve? You know, because to face the outcome of something that we don't have any control over, or we have no hope or confidence, that's really a heavy way to live life. And we've all been there. And guess what? We'll be there again, too. Romans 15, 13, I think we'll see it on the screen here. May the God of hope fill you with joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you might overflow with hope. Hope is a big deal. And when it comes to God our Father and how he deals with us, he wants to make sure that we are lathered up and soaking in hope. Filled up. Did you catch that? The God of hope wants to fill us with joy and peace. And who doesn't want joy and peace? Joy and peace as you, though, trust. Little catch there. As you trust, as you develop trust, as I develop that trust, I can overflow in hope. And, you know, we've had a tough, you know, 3-4 years here recently, if you hadn't noticed, that feeling confident about a hope, something we all want to have plenty of. But I think sometimes when we use the word hope, we're actually using the word wish. I want to throw up some definitions here that I've manufactured for wish. Quite often when we say hope, we're really kind of thinking wish. Wish is a desire or a craving that is not backed up with any assurance of happening, of achieving it. I just am wishing this will happen, but I have no reason to believe it should. I don't have any evidence. There's no track record. I just wish. I just wish XYZ would happen, but I can't. It's not backed up with any reality. Hope, though, hope, as the Bible is using the word hope, hope is this confidence, this certainty of outcome without knowing the details. This certainty of who God is and how he operates, what his character is like, without knowing how just practically it's going to play out. We would probably all like to know, have hope in his character, and tell me also the details of how you're going to do this, God. And to which God says, "Yeah, no, I don't play like that. I want you to have hope in who I am." It is such a big deal. It is such a big deal that I would feel comfortable enough saying this fairly outrageous statement. All of Christianity on earth falls apart without hope. All of Christianity on earth falls apart if I do not have a solid hope in who he is. Now, we'll still get to heaven, but if that hope is weak, if it's remote, if it's intermittent, if it's reluctant, and I have hope in just like everything I've just said, my hope has been intermittent, reluctant, weak, almost non-existent sometimes. In fact, if I were to be honest, a lot of the time, if I were to say, "I have hope in who God is," I'm really saying I have hope in my checkbook, in my experience, my cleverness. But we know how we find out the quality of our hope? When it's game time, when it's crisis, when we don't have anything else up our sleeve. Hope is something that God wants us to have and in abundance. Now, we're going to take a look here. We'll start off here with a story of chapter 7, 1 to 14. King Ahaz. King Ahaz is the king of Judah. And let me just set a little bit of this up. Israel was broken up after King Solomon into what we call a southern kingdom and a northern kingdom. The northern kingdom was quite often called Israel or Ephraim or Samaria. Down here, Judah. Judah was the southern kingdom. And that's where the capital, David's city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was in Judah. Now, the king of the north and Aram, which was now today Syria for the most part, those two kings had lined up and made an alliance with each other, and they were going to go attack the southern kingdom, Ahaz. Okay? Verse 2, that tells us that when Judah, they call it David's family, David's house, was informed, when they were told, in other words, King Ahaz, king of the southern kingdom, was told that Aram and Ephraim, in other words, the northern kingdom, they're coming down and attacking us. It actually says they were trembling like leaves on a tree. They're just scared spitless. And with good reason. If we look in 2 Chronicles, which is another account of the story, it gives us some of a look at the same story that we're looking at 7. It says that the king of the north had already come down and killed 120,000 soldiers of the southern kingdom. You know, they were having their way. And so there's evidence that there was this was a force coming down, and they were hauling off men and women, children and women up back up to the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom. So this word gets to Ahaz, and oh my word, they have no recourse of what to do, really. They are being devastated. So God sends Isaiah, actually Isaiah and his son, he's told to take his son, Isaiah and his son, go down to King Ahaz to talk to him. Now let me also just set up a little bit of the context here, in that Ahaz was as wicked as probably they come. He did not follow God. He probably gave some token sacrifices to Yahweh, to the Lord, to God, the Creator God. But mostly what he was doing was burning family members on an altar to their foreign gods. I still don't understand how a person would ever think that's a good idea. He was worshiping foreign gods. So in other words, he has no really pursuit of God at all. And yet Isaiah is sent to him. Comes to Isaiah and he tells him where to meet, actually, Ahaz. And tell him this. These words. Be careful. Don't worry. Don't lose heart. Saying that to King Ahaz, who's as wicked as they come, and here's God saying, don't worry, don't go crazy, be careful. I like that word he said, be careful, because don't do something stupid here, Ahaz. Calm down. So God is trying to de-escalate the fears of this wicked king, and I'm thinking, why bother? He's so wicked, let him get his butt kicked. God just a testimony to saying, even this wicked king, I want to bring hope into him. So here, he's trying to calm him down. And then verses 5 and 6, he comes in and Isaiah says, God says through Isaiah, I know exactly what's going on. I know that the king of Aram and the northern kingdom, they're Pekah, they're coming and they've joined. And they've already decided that they're going to form an alliance. And when they defeat you, they already have picked out the person that they're going to put as king over instead of you. So in other words, he's trying to assure Ahaz, I know exactly what's going on. It's not like I don't know. It's like I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to get some consultants. No, I know exactly what's going on. Verses 7 and 8. I love the beginning of verse 7 here. Because after saying that he knows all that's going on and calmed down, and then he just simply says, it's not going to take place. It's not going to happen. Within 65 years, God says, that northern kingdom will be so shattered into pieces, it won't even exist. So Ahaz is still thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, we've lost a lot of soldiers, and all the word is that we have no response to this, and you're saying just to not worry, and that it's they aren't going to keep coming. Well, wait a minute. They've made a lot of distance because Jerusalem, this was the idea. The scripture tells us that those two kingdoms from the north had come down to the walls of Jerusalem. They had already devastated much of Judah. Now they're knocking on the walls there, but the scripture tells us they couldn't get in at all. So here he is. Ahaz has been, let's review here. God has sent a prophet to him, to a man who's as wicked as the day is long. That was pretty generous. He's tried to calm him down with, do not worry, don't lose heart, don't overreact here. Third, he's telling him, I know exactly what's going on. I see the whole picture. From my vantage point, I see it all. There's nothing that I don't know about what's going on here. Then, to top it off, if that isn't enough, in verse 11, God says to Isaiah, go tell Ahaz to ask for a sign. You know, that I know he's having a hard time believing that there could be a good outcome here. There's a hard reason to have any hope at all. I'm sure, you know, that's hard for him to grasp. So go ask for a sign. Ask me a sign. In fact, he says, as high as the heavens, the request could be, or as low as the dead. In other words, don't let there be any restrictions on what type of sign that you want to have. You want to have some proof? You just ask. Ask me a sign, and I'll prove to you that I'm going to do this. It's like he's won the lottery. Here's God saying, I'll prove to you. You just name it, and I'll give you the proof. Does that sound pretty good? I mean, I would like that if someone came to my door and said, yeah, your mortgage is going to be all paid off in 1 week. King Ahaz, what do you think his response was? Yabba dabba do, like Fred Flintstone, you say, no, not even. His response was, I will not ask God for a sign. To which the prophet probably said, say what? I don't know why. What? In fact, it goes on to say there in verses 12 and 13, Isaiah says, is it not enough that you're trying the patience of man, but you'll actually try the patience of God himself? Hey, Ahaz. In other words, Isaiah's thinking, you're trying my patience. I'm here sent to help you out. You're not even listening. Why would you do this? Well, the speculation is that Ahaz, I think, on several fronts, the reason he's not going to ask God is he has no relationship with this God, this creator God, Yahweh. As I'd said, he'd already been sacrificing to idols, all these other idols, so much with his conviction that even his own children he was sacrificing. He had no reason to believe that this God would show any interest towards him. 2 Kings, chapter 16, it says that probably, it says in 2 Kings 16 that he, Ahaz, sent a message to the king of Assyria. At the time, Assyria was the major player, empire of the world. And he said, I'll send you silver and all sorts of gold and stuff if you, king of Assyria, would go over and attack these two countries that are trying to attack me. So this is another way of saying that King Ahaz had something up his sleeve. He already had convinced himself that he had a plan, so he didn't need to hope in God. And he did end up giving all this loot to the king of Syria, who went over and devastated, you know, the two kingdoms and stopped him from being attacked. But that was a scheme that he would have to do if he didn't have any hope in who God is. He hadn't cultivated, he hasn't relied on, Ahaz didn't have a history of crisis behind him that God truly took care of. He didn't have that history behind him that he has, his hope in God was robust, strong. In fact, I forgot one of the verses here. If you want to throw it up, in verse 9 it says, at the end of all the encouragement that Isaiah was giving Ahaz, finally then God says through Isaiah, if you don't stand firm in your faith, you won't stand at all. Yes, he was trying to give Ahaz a lot of encouragement and hope. He was bending over backwards to try and breathe hope into a man and a kingdom, a city. But he did say, I do need you to stand firm in trusting me. And the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. He hadn't cultivated, hadn't taken serious. In fact, he'd gone to quite extremes to build hope in these other gods. So there was no hope left to put into a god. It didn't make sense. Well, when Ahaz says, I will not ask God, and Ahaz, you know, said, say, what? You're trying to pay God of patience? And God comes back with, okay, you don't want a sign? I'll show you a sign, though. The virgin will conceive, Isaiah said, and a son will be born, and they will call him Emmanuel. You know, we've heard that prophecy. We know what that verse is talking about. I know that there apparently is some speculation that that wasn't a reference to Jesus Christ, but still, it's an impossible situation to know about, you know, years ahead that this would happen. So that's still kind of impressive. But even so, two quick chapters later, Isaiah breathes the prophecy in that we've all heard also. Now it's just slipped my mind there. To us is given, a child is born, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And the strength of his government and peace, there will be no end. That's chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. So just in such brief amount of time there, almost in the same breath, God, through Isaiah, has given a prophecy about what will happen. Now, I remember thinking this even as a kid, that here is trouble in this time frame, and a prophecy has been revealed about something that's going to happen 700 years later? How is that going to help me here? I still got the enemy knocking on the door. What? So a virgin's going to conceive and have a, and is going to, Emmanuel, what? Oh, whatever. You see, the point wasn't that Savior was going to be born in the next 15 minutes and come down and solve everything. I believe the point was God was saying, I know all. I have seen the future. I am letting you know right now, you haven't picked up on any of my other cues or my other advances towards you to breathe in encouragement. I'm telling you, I know the future and I have the power and the wherewithal to pull it off. I know how things are going to play out in the end. I win, is what the prophecies are saying. And that's just two of many prophecies that Jesus would be coming. In fact, I kind of tested that on myself the other day. I was thinking, in one of my more discouraged moments, that the country that I live in now doesn't look anything like the country I grew up in years ago. And I was kind of saying, boy, it seems to be sliding away into looking not as hopeful. And I thought, well, what if the United States does just kind of fade off into oblivion? But there was a prophecy that said that my grandchildren were going to be relentless followers of Jesus Christ. If I got that prophecy from the God, I'd say, well, let the country fall apart. I have hope. The scriptures affirm that I can have hope. No matter what happens here, God will pick it up and accomplish what he wants. And the only reason I can have hope in that is because I've come to understand that he is good. And he can only come up with good ideas. He can only come up with the best ideas. His desire is that I live in this hope, even though we don't understand how the timing and the details and just how he's going to accomplish it. Don't need to know that. I know the one who's making the decisions. And what he would really like is that I'm coming to know him better and better and better. This hope that says, from my vantage point, it's really not looking really good at all. But that is a small picture. What I see much bigger is the person of who God is. I remember Graham Cook told about a little vision that he had. I think I've shared this before, where in his dream he was seeing a whole horde of enemy advancing towards him. It looked like all the orcs from the Lord of the Rings. These weren't pretty characters. All rushing and with evil in their eyes and their weapons and everything rushing towards him. And he felt surely this is the end. And he was perplexed and could just see that he was about to die in a very horrible death. When up from behind that picture, Jesus stood up, smiling, and Jesus said, isn't this gonna be great? Because Jesus knew exactly what he was gonna say in this dream to him. And sure enough, all of those enemies went right past him and didn't see him at all. That's where hope is built. Hope is refined. When we face the difficult times, when we can't figure it out and we feel so lousy, our energy is drained, our mind's a fog. That's how I felt the last 3 months. The beautiful thing about it, though, is this is when I know God is doing some of his finest work in me and you. But he's got to get our full attention. And to get our full attention, it usually means some suffering, some pain, some large inconvenience at minimum. No matter where you are in your walk with the Lord, if God is willing to take Ahaz, the worst, and say, I want to breathe hope into him, no matter where you and I are in our walk, he still says, I want to breathe hope into you. I need for you to have hope. When you have hope in me, your face can finally show it. And when other people see that, they're much more attracted to come to know that same Jesus. He is in high-speed pursuit of wanting us to live with a hope that produces joy and peace. You know, I'll ask the worship team to come up. That game of the sport, the Ginásio de Ibirapuera, when I had been looking down there and they ended up, I looked at the doors there and of the tunnel and there was no hope. And the next day, I went back to another game. And when I was sitting up on the stands during the first game, each night there was two games. In the first game, I happened to see one of the American basketball players sitting up on the stands all by himself. So I walked over to him, and I sat down, and so many words I wanted to say, what happened? But I used all the tact that a 17-year-old could have. And I said, so where are you from? Oh, I'm from Wyoming. Oh, and where are the rest of the team from? Oh, these are just a bunch of guys that I don't even know their names, really. We've been together for about 2 weeks, but they're from all these other colleges. And all the colleges he mentioned, I've never even heard of. They weren't the big ones. They'd been together for 2 weeks, had five practices, and were thrown down to Sao Paulo to represent the United States. Oh, I get it. The more information, the more knowledge I have, it explained. And so then if I had known that from the beginning, I wouldn't have had any hope in that some would be coming out through the door. I projected my own assessment of things. Knowledge, it really is king. The more knowledge, the more experience I have in walking with Jesus through my trials right now, that's what builds hope. Hope of such a quality that it will weather any storm. So our assignment is, for you filling in the blanks there earlier, our assignment is to learn how to trust God. How am I going to arrange my day, the usage of my time, my energies, to come to know Jesus in such a way that it's not just head knowledge, it actually becomes heart knowledge. That knowledge turns into trust, and trust that gives us joy and peace. That's our assignment. You can try and be as well behaved as you want. Yay, I appreciate that. But the real assignment is that I learn to come to know him so well that I can quickly have trust that I enjoy him.